You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with the under-16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Ulster.
Hi everyone, and you're very welcome back to Cawley's Call, Series 2, Episode 11, flying through the episodes, and we're all in good form this week. We're actually buzzing because we have come in here week after week throughout lockdowns. Stewie's had brown cardigans, black cardigans, grey cardigans, you name it. The doom and gloom written all over his face, but he came in here tonight beaming with a smile from ear to ear because May the 10th, the country is reopened. Yes, Stu, we're back.
So first of all, I came in, I got fucking soaked coming across the road. It's pissing rain.
We're starting on a high now. Don't be giving out. Come on.
Do you know what I'm wearing?
Okay.
It's called a jardigan.
I love it.
This is how low it went. This is a V-neck jumper that I cut down the middle.
A jardigan.
And it's like an open cardigan.
See, look, not only are you a footballer, musician.
That's how low I've gone.
Now you're a fucking fashion designer and everything.
That's how low I've gone.
But no, it is. It's great to see, Stu. Around the place. The place is buzzing. There's lots of traffic, shops open. We are very close.
We're very close. Now, don't forget, we said this back in November.
No, don't be putting a dampener on it, will you? Come on now.
We did. We said we'd be back. And I'm lucky enough, I'm back in my job 2 weeks. I've been able to get this early return scheme. I'm the only one in the building.
Really?
It's 400 people. And just what?
You're talking to yourself.
I'm genuine. Do you know what I'm like? I'm like Hugh Grant. In Love Actually, I'm dancing around number 10 down the street, down the stairs and all, blaring music.
I can actually picture that.
What I found was, I'm not a work from home person. I can work from home, I'm able to work from home, but I just don't agree with it. I like to have work to go to. Mm. I don't want my home to be my job. I don't want to live in my job. That's why I've always been that way, like, you know. So the day I got back in, very weird, very odd. You know, a few hours, and then literally, like riding a bike, it all just comes back. And yeah. The next day, back to normal. And
feel like we're never away.
Pep in the step. Felt like I've never been away. I've been walking the city now for 2 weeks. You can see the traffic is starting to grow. The footfall is starting to grow. People in good form. I think it's going to be a great summer. I hope it will be, like, you know, but I think
it will be absolutely.
You can really sense it, like, you know.
And to keep you on the buzz that you're on, Stu, a good friend of ours and a hero of yours and our former teammate and friend and all sorts, and we love this guy, don't we?
He's ridiculous.
Over the weekend, a certain Mr. Wes Houlihan got Cambridge promoted, 38 years of age, still doing his thing. Phenomenal. Like, we were lucky enough to play with him, train with him. Mm. We know him, great lad, but what a player.
Oh, he's special, a very special individual, I have to say. Such an inspirational character. You know, just to do what he's done throughout his career, and to do it the hard way. Mm. You know, again, I'll always go back to it. Wes, when Wes left Shells in 05, I think it was May of 05, he went to Livingston for like 30, 40 grand or something, you know.
Paul Lambert
up in the back arse. No, you're lucky enough, maybe Paul Lambert was the manager
only for him,
yeah. And then did it the hard way, went to Blackpool, you know, under the radar. Mm. All of a sudden he's in Norwich and he's lighting the place up, like, you know. And I'm delighted for him because it's a fantastic story, like. Mm. at the age he's at as well, like, he's always kept himself fit, in wonderful shape.
And that's the thing, Stu, because one of the criticisms, or one, like, the myth or the narrative around Wezzo was always that he doesn't maybe look after himself, or the fact that when he did play the games, like when he wasn't getting picked for Ireland, as if he wasn't physically strong. But he's one of the strongest players we've ever played with.
Yeah, he's got, because he's that low centre of gravity, hasn't he? Like, you know,
but he's in great shape.
Yeah, completely, completely. And I don't want to kind of, I hate looking back on, oh God, he got a raw deal, or we should have loved him more. But he's definitely getting that now. And I've sensed for the last couple of years, like, you know, people constantly would talk about, God, can we get Wes Houlihan back into the team or whatever. But I'm delighted for him that he gets that recognition now. And to be still doing it at the age that is that is credit to him.
The photo over the weekend, I'm drinking a pint of Guinness and it was brilliant, wasn't
it? That looked really nice, didn't it? I have to say, it really
He's a good looking little shit as well, isn't he? But no, it was we had to give him a mention because it was obviously a brilliant moment. But joining us this week is another technically gifted footballer and another lad who we're keeping this team going in terms of everybody buzzing, because if this lad isn't buzzing after the win they had at the weekend and them breaking a record last week, I don't know who is. But Dylan Watts, you're very welcome.
How are you, lads? Thanks for having us.
No problem, Dylan. How are you?
Yeah, good. All good, yeah.
Yeah? Are you in as good a form as Stewie now, or yeah? Do we have to hype you up a little bit more?
No, I'm in good form.
You should be in great form. Yeah. Young man.
Yeah.
The world at your feet. All ahead of you.
Playing in a brilliant team. Winning every week. Scoring goals. Scoring goals in 97 minutes every week.
10 grand a week, is it? 10 grand a week.
Steady now.
But Dylan, yeah, obviously the season is going really well for you, of course, coming off the back of a brilliant season last year. But to carry on the unbeaten run, and I suppose just over the weekend, the big game, because the fact that St. Pat's were in second and it was the top two facing off against each other, I suppose to get the win and the manner in which it came, it must have been some feeling right at the death.
I know it was. Like, it was some balls now, I'd say. And, you know, coming into the last 10 minutes of the game, there wasn't really much happening, like, you know, and I think it was maybe like, both teams were kind of settling for a draw, you know, and then just in the last kick of the game, to get the win, it's huge, and it shows the group we have, you know, at the moment, that we can score so late, you know, we never give up, and we keep going till the final whistle.
And is that something that comes from the group yourselves, Dylan, or obviously from the management team? Because I even tweeted at the weekend, it's no fluke when you're doing it 3, 4, 5 times. It can happen the odd time and it can happen to any team. But the fact that you're scoring late goals now regularly nearly, as I say, is that coming from the drive within the group, or is that something management may have spoken to you about as well?
I think it's a bit of both. Like, obviously, you know, we're on the pitch at the time, you know, and keep going for as long as we do, you know. I think we could probably deal with finishing games off a little bit earlier. But like you said, like, it's obviously no fluke that if you do it once, you know, then it's maybe a fluke, twice maybe. But, you know, we've done it so many times this year that it's nearly becoming, like, it's not really a fluke anymore, you know. But I think maybe we'd like to finish it off a little bit earlier than the last minute.
Well, that's the thing.
Take it all day, you know.
Of course you would, yeah. And especially on Saturday, because you're playing your nearest rivals at the moment. But I wonder, deep down, maybe Stephen Bradley is thinking, he probably won't tell me because he won't talk to me. But but I wonder, deep down, is he feeling as though maybe, Dylan, because you were so good last year and you won the league really at a canter, I actually don't think you've hit the heights yet of what you did last year. And obviously there's some new players and there's still room for improvement, which is scary for the other teams. But I wonder, is there part of him thinking, especially maybe against the likes of Longford or against the likes of Drogheda, that you should be putting them to bed a lot sooner than what you did?
Yeah, definitely. I think we know that as a group as well, you know. You know, I think there was a lot of people saying that we didn't really start too well, but at the end of the day, you know, we're still getting points on the board and still winning games, you know, which is kind of scary, you know, because then when we come into a bit of form, you know, we'll hopefully then finish teams off like that earlier, you know.
And especially, Dylan, I suppose you look at the group and the squad. You had Jack and Aaron McAniff last year, and the quality, I suppose, in your position as well in centre midfield. And it must be a joy to play with the likes of those lads, and that there's regular competition. It's not only what goes on a Friday night, but day to day as well in the training, that the standards that you're setting and what you have to meet every day.
Yeah, no, that's it, exactly. Like, I mean, last year's group as well was unbelievably talented. I think this year's group's also the same, you know. Like the players you mentioned there, you know, they were huge players for us. And, you know, I think there was a lot before the season how we deal with losing them players that you mentioned, obviously, but I think we've done well so far, you know, and just every day in training, you know, there's a real belief in the squad and a real push in training, you know, nobody's letting up. And I mean, like you said, every day, day-to-day basis, the sense of the players and the standards that are set within the squad from the management staff as well, you know, it's scary, you know, you can't let up in training, and every day it's intense, and everybody else prove a point. So I think it makes the group stronger and it makes us better as individuals as well.
Do you feel going out on the games every week that there's a target on your back? Obviously, you're the champions, you're setting the standards. everyone raises their game to maybe play against you. So maybe that's another reason as to why you're not putting teams to bed, as because everyone's raising their game playing against you.
Yeah, no, that's it, 100%. Yeah, like, I mean, if you look at the run we're on at the moment, you know, every team in the country wants to beat you. You know, you do have that target on your back, but it's also then it's a good thing for us as well, because we know then Friday night, you know, you can't, if you let your standards drop or whatever, you can be beaten, you know. And any team in this league can do you on an off night. Like, so I think it's huge credit to ourselves as well that we haven't let our standards drop, you know. Every Friday night, it's the same, you know. We're treating every team the same, and I think it's, like you said, it's huge credit to us as a team, you know, to be able to turn up every Friday night and, you know, not let your standards drop. It's a massive credit to the team.
For the likes of you, we started obviously talking about Wezo and how technically gifted he was, and I suppose you look at the game now. Across the board, really, everyone's trying to play, and it suits you down to the ground, Dylan, because obviously very technically gifted player yourself. But if you look at the management team at Shamrock Rovers with Stephen Bradley, who was a very good midfielder himself, Stephen McPhail, the same, an unbelievable player, and that was the way they wanted the game played. So for you and the likes of, I suppose, those technically gifted players in that midfield area, is that something, I suppose, it must be a joy for you because the manager is encouraging you to play that way, but to have all those other lads around you singing off the same hymn sheet?
Yeah, no, exactly. Like you said, obviously Steve Maxwell, the manager as well, hits the pointers, like, from them is huge as well. I remember Wes when he came to train with us one, I think it might have been one summer, to keep him ticking over. And the first training session, he nutmegged me straight away. This is when I just joined as well. So it was my first training session. He stuck on the corner. I was thinking, oh my God, what a player this lad is.
Yeah, but Dylan, you were probably the 477th player he nutmegged at that stage.
Exactly. And I was just thinking, my God, what a player. Like you said, like you mentioned, Steve McFair and stuff like that, he's been huge for me as well. You know, in the off-season and stuff like that, he took time out to do running programs for me.
It's interesting you say that. Dylan, because how much input, I suppose, Stephen is obviously the manager, but is he very hands-on on the training ground, or you have Glenn Cronin there, and obviously you mentioned there that Stephen McPhail is very good at maybe pulling you aside, or the midfielders giving you tips. Just how hands-on is Stephen Bradley on the training ground?
Everybody has their say, you know, Glenn as well. Everybody has, like, some certain sessions there, you know what I mean? So maybe Glenn might do them one day, then the manager will do a different deal the next, but all very enjoyable and all football orientated.
And from your own personal point of view, Dylan, obviously last year, as you said, the competition was fierce to play in that midfield with the quality that you had. Of course, the two boys leave. Are you feeling personally as though this is the year I'm going to step up? And it didn't pan out, I suppose, at the start. You had to fight your way into the team again because Mandrell comes in, Chris McCann. But the last few weeks, you've obviously got back into the team and playing regular. So are you feeling as though now you can become an integral part of the team to go on and win the league?
Yeah, 100%. Like you said there, you know, we've built, you know, we lost players, but we've obviously replaced them then again. And, you know, I'm the same as everyone else in that midfield. You know, you have to do it every week. And, you know, there's a lot of competition there, which is obviously brilliant as well, you know. Like, it makes you a better player, competition. There's no doubt about that. And but I'm starting to feel now that I'm playing well, you know, and I'm fitter than I've ever been. So, continue.
Yeah, it's reflective in the games the last week. You've been obviously very, very good. And I suppose from your own perspective then, Dylan, starting off, you would have made your name really at UCD. And I remember watching you in one of them European games when UCD had the brilliant run. The period you went to Leicester then. You're 24 now, and would you feel as though maybe you're just maturing into the player that you want to be? And would you still have aspirations maybe to go across the water even though you're 24 now?
Yeah, no, I would obviously. It would have to be the right move and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm happy. I'm delighted where I am at the moment in Shamrock Rovers. And I could be happier at the moment in the squad I'm in and the way we're playing football. So, for me at the moment, anyway, it's all about concentrating on Shamrock Rovers. And if something comes up, you never know, you know. But for me, I'm delighted about Shamrock Rovers at the moment.
And even from your time at Leicester, Dylan, and then the period at Bohemians, you look at Shamrock Rovers now. To me, looking in from the outside, they're the ones setting the standard on the pitch, off the pitch. You look at the academy, how everything has been done. The standard's going in every morning to Roadstone. As you say, you're living the dream really here with the club you're playing for at the moment and the team and the fact that you're winning every week.
Yeah, no, actually, like you said, I mean, the facilities and stuff we have in Shamrock Rovers are are very similar to the ones that will be set in England, you know. I think now it's up to other clubs, you know, to try and follow suit. But, you know, the facilities that we have in Rovers, it's hard not to get better as a player. Training and then facilities every week, and obviously the team and how we're playing, like you said, is it's brilliant. It's a real joy at the moment to be a part of it.
And the fact that you got the brilliant win on Saturday put you 5 points clear. Is there a real drive, Dylan, to, even though, as I say, you won the league last year, but the standards that you're setting, but you want to drive on and win more and more and more?
Yeah, 100%. Like you said, every game, you know, we have to go into every game trying to win it. And, you know, we prepare every Friday. It's the exact same, no matter the game. So there is a huge drive within the team to win trophies. Everybody wants to win trophies. It's why you play the game, you know. But, 100%, there's a real drive within the squad. You can feel it even every day in training. You can really feel the drive within the squad.
And in terms, Dylan, last week there was a lot of plaudits going your way because of the record that you broke, and you followed that up at the weekend. It's 32 games now, which is unbelievable achievement, really. Is that something that you would have spoken about, Stephen, maybe, or would you keep that in-house? Or is it something that you do have your eye on, that you wanted to break it first of all, but carry on now and make it the best record that there's ever been?
Yeah, I think the record you set, I think, is unbelievable. It's obviously a record that's been there for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to keep the run going, to, like you said, every single week, it's just one game after another, you know, trying to win the next game, the next game, the next game. And obviously, it could reach 36 games would be full season usually. So I think that would be definitely a huge achievement for the group.
Yeah, well, it is. It's phenomenal, Dylan. It should be acknowledged. We acknowledged it here. And as I say, it's kind of scary for the other teams as well, the run you're on at the moment, the fact that you beat Pats at the weekend. You've opened up the little bit of a gap now, 5 points. You've Derry at home on Saturday. I'm hoping that someone can kind of close the gap a little bit to make a league title race, but you're obviously inching to get as many wins on the board and win another league. But we wish you well in all that, Dylan. And listen, thanks a million for joining us.
Alan, top man. Thanks for having us, right?
No problem, Dylan.
Thanks very much.
So you asked you, it's 32 games on Saturday. Phenomenal, really, the record.
You have to acknowledge it. You know, Rovers have done their stuff. We touched on it last week as well, and the fact that, you know, they've invested in the club, they've had to come from some difficult periods. Mm-hmm. Very, very difficult periods. But, you know, what the positive thing is that they've come out the other side in really good shape, and they've set a standard, which is great. We know we need to have clubs like this in our league at all times. And I'd hazard to say that there was a period maybe, probably after maybe 06, 07, where we kind of didn't have it for a while until maybe Dundalk came along, and they were kind of set a standard, and you see the effect that it has on all the other clubs. I mean, it brought Cork on out of the blue, and then it obviously brought Rovers on. Mm-hmm. You know, Rovers are looking at this from the outside saying, hey, hang on a second, we need to be here, like, you know, and they've done that, and they've set the standards for the others. So we always need that. And you have to give them huge credit for that run, like, you know. I mean, ultimately, look, we'd love to have a much more, you know, we'd love to be here talking about Pats and Sligo and Dundalk and Rovers and maybe even another four or five clubs, Bohemians, exactly, like, you know. But I think the game, it's at a stage where everyone is kind of, you know, going through a transition period. Bows are obviously waiting for Daly Mount to be developed. Pat's similar kind of thing. Like, you know, they'd like to possibly get out of Richmond and rebuild. And that has an effect on a football club. Like, you know, it may not necessarily have an effect on the team that's playing. But as a whole, the club itself, it can't make certain decisions, you know, with regards to the whole infrastructure until it knows...
That's one thing.
Until it knows what it's about, you know what I mean?
That, like, Shamrock Rovers have
stability. They have that. They've gone through all of this, like, you know. They've in fact, they've gone through the whole thing of Milltown, which was this is a huge psychological effect on the football club. Mm. For a year, people still talk about it.
But in terms of where they are now with the ground, with their training set up, Dylan just mentioned himself.
Exactly.
They can focus everything into the team and the squad now.
They know they're a full-time professional football club. This is where they train. They own it. This is where they play. You know, they own it. Okay, they don't own it. But I mean, that's their ground.
That's their home, yeah.
That's their dressing room. They're not, you know, they're not there temporarily. Like, you know, it's all long term. So when you have all these things in place, you can set, you can bring in investment, you know, from the outside in, and you can grow. And exactly, that's where they're at. And that's where I would hazard to say that's where Dundalk aren't.
Mm.
You know,
they should be.
We, when you consider the amount of money that they brought in, prize money to European football, you know, about 12 million in the last 6 or 7 years. Like, you know,
I was up there Friday. We're going to get into that, right? Because the Dundalk thing, I said it on the telly Friday night, and I really believe it, and I'll say it again now. I think it's over. We're going to get into it, but I want to, because we're on the Shamrock Rovers theme at the moment. Obviously, the big game was on Saturday evening. I watched it, St. Pat's. A draw was a fair result, Stu. They absolutely snatched it at the end.
But
fair play to them. A mistake from Lee Desmond, trying to be a little bit too clever maybe on the half line, because that's the way he plays, Lee, and he's an excellent player. Maybe at that stage, just be cute. And I'm not saying clear your lines or get rid of it, but just don't get caught on the half line. Mandrew sharp and quick. And to be fair to Mandrew, he had a lot to do when he nicked it off him. He still had to run from the half line and show the composure. He held off Desmond as it was getting into the box. Desmond was chasing him back, held him off. It was hard to see the angle. Could the keeper have saved it or done better? And I like that keeper, but it was a great finish and they snatched, and it was an unbelievable win for them.
Yeah, it was. Now look, so a few things about the goal. I mean, and Dylan even said it there, the game had kind of gone into a bit of a lull. I think that, you know, the last 10 minutes it was a little bit flat. You could see maybe both sides as well. Obviously Rovers hadn't settled for a draw, because Mandrew kind of pounced on an opportunistic moment, and full credit to him, because,
and he's coming up with big moments at the minute.
Well, yeah, and he, you know, when you've got the likes of Danny Mandrew, in the 90th minute, second minute, mm-hmm. you know,
bursting a gut
to get to, then you're in a good place, like, you know, and credit to him, and that he's, I think the penny is dropping now for him with regards to the work ethic stuff, you know, what's expected of you. I mean, never had any doubts about the talent, but when you put talent and work together.
And that's
there's no
the demands. Dylan spoke about it there. The demands are put on them every, and that's what you have to be to stay the best.
Completely. But the goal, I kind of saw a different way. There was a few things about it that really bugged me. Like, you know, just even defensively, to have. I know Desmond got caught out.
The other centre half.
Where's he? Where's your cover, Sam Bone?
Sam Bone. Did you see?
Where
him?
Is he?
He
like,
ran,
you know,
back in a straight line.
50, yeah, but you have a look at it again as well. You got Jamie Lennon, who's the midfielder, tracking back, and he's telling Sam Bone to stay. You know, go for goal. Go get to the ball.
No, I don't know why he
get to the ball. Yeah.
And you could see what I thought was in Desmond's mind as well, because I'm thinking he's going to give away a penalty here. Because, you know, at that stage, you've made a mistake. He's panicking, running back. He might lunge in, whatever. And once Mandrew's in front of you, you're done.
He needed the cover.
But to be fair to Desmond, he didn't dive in. He was like that. He was probably thinking the centre half will come over here. My keeper will bail me out. He tried and tried to get back. But Sam Bone, you're right. Why he didn't make his way over at an angle towards to try and block the shot instead of running back straight?
And that'd be the one thing that I'm sure Stevie needs to point out immediately. Like, you know, I mean, listen, first and foremost, you're defenders. You stop goals. Mm. End of story. Like, you know, so you can't have a situation. What's the point in playing forward to back? Because most teams play one up front, right? What's the point in having four players back if they can't be there as cover for each other? Like, you know, so it's a natural thing. It's a very simple thing. Like, you know, but that disappointed me. And the fact that he had 50 yards to make up, he needs to get across. He needed to have that cover there, didn't he? And it's costing the game. It's a big mistake for them. And I think I was writing in my column on Friday about it, and kind of there's always, I was kind of making the analogy of this, you know, after 10 games it's a full round has been complete. You're at the start of a second round. You almost feel like it's moving day, you know, like if you think of the golf analogy, like, you know, Saturday tends to be moving day, that kind of thing. And I always feel in our season, there's always two opportunities to really steal a march on some of the other teams, and this is the time period, because it's just before summer. You're leading into, you know, the European games. You get a lot of a bit of a congestion of fixtures, and so on and so forth. So it's always
make
good.
The games
it's always
now.
Good to steal a march. Yeah, you know, go into Europe, comfortable, you can focus a little bit on that. And then I always find maybe September is another time period. But Rovers definitely now have gotten the upper hand.
And I think, to be fair as well, Stu, Pat started very well. Forrester, our man, getting a great goal, has started the game well. And it was kind of unusual what they did shape-wise. It looked like he played off the left, almost like a 4-4-2, which was, I think it caught Shamrock Rovers out for the first 15-20 minutes of the game because they probably weren't expecting that. And the little lad Alfie played in the middle with Lennon. Wide on the right, King, and they kind of played Matty Smith off Coughlin as well. So it was kind of, I think it caught Shamrock Rovers off just to start off with. Got the goal. To be fair to Shamrock Rovers, once they got a foothold in the game, they were all over them. The goal was coming, Stu. I felt the goal was coming, to be fair. Burke again popped up, got a great goal.
Is that a pop-off on someone on the
Brian
side?
Kerr. Brian, over on the side.
That was a Brian Kerr?
Yeah.
Because I'm normally used to... I'm
giving it socks.
Yeah, there's always somebody there that's always giving
Brian.
It socks.
And the camera went to him then, and yeah. They asked Brian about it yesterday, and Brian said, we don't know what he was talking about.
Well, we get Brian on next week.
We'll have Brian on, and Brian will sort him out. The grandfather of football, he shouldn't be giving out to him on the sideline. He should know better, Mr. Burke.
Respect.
But he scored anyway, Stu. But to be fair, then I'm thinking Shamrock Rovers finished it stronger. And I'm thinking the second half, Pats were hanging on coming up to half time. I'm thinking if the second half, if they come out and play the same way, you can only see one winner here. But to be fair to Pats, they regrouped. And they had all the ball in the second half, huffed and puffed the fear, but never really created any chances. And as you said, and as Dylan said, maybe at that stage, late in the second half, they're probably, not that they were settling for a draw, but you're thinking that's the way the game is going to play out. So I have to be honest, it was really harsh on Pats. They deserved the point. I'm not saying they should have won the game, but they definitely deserved the point for the way they played overall, but particularly that first maybe 15-20 minutes and definitely the second half.
So we've spoken about Pats this year as being, there's been a big transition period there. Steve's gone in, there's a mentality change, and you can it's paying huge dividends. You can see it. They're now competing with Rovers for this league title, and you know they're at it. Like, you know, now the difference there between Rovers and Pats is that Rovers are there at the moment. They have that mentality. They've won the league. They've been at this for a couple of years now. They've developed their squad. You know, they build, and it takes time to get to that week in, week out. Pats are only experiencing this at the moment. We were 10 games into the season, and you're always going to have these drops. You know, to do it week in, week out, it's very difficult to tell a player what it's like. You have to experience it, you have to go through it, and you have to learn. And I've no doubt they'll learn from it. But the key thing for them now is that they regroup. They accept the fact that they got done because. They switched off. You can't switch off at this level, especially not against Shamrock Rovers. And then you move on, and then they kick on again because.
And regroup. They're playing Drogheda now. They're away to Drogheda Friday. Tough game. Drogheda are going quite well. But it's important to get back on the horse straight away.
Completely.
It's a great point as well that you make about the experience thing, because to be fair to St. Pat's, they've got the plaudits. They've had a great start. We've asked the question, can they sustain it? I think they can. They went toe-to-toe with Shamrock Rovers. But this could be the best thing that ever happened to them, Stu, in terms of, as you says, you have to learn through mistakes like that. Shamrock Rovers probably had that 2-3 years ago when they were fighting with Dundalk. And look at them now.
Of course they did.
So here you have Pats. If this is part of their winning journey or whatever, that they might win a league two years down the line, they might look back at this moment and say, remember that time we lost in the 93rd minute?
Completely.
And what we learned from it.
Yeah, totally agree. Two ways you come out of this game. You go into that dressing room afterwards feeling sorry for yourself, thinking, you know, we should have, you know, no use, no good to you. You'll be torn apart in a few weeks. Right? You go into the dressing room and say, we got done by a little bit of naivety, but by a team that went, that kept going right to the end, and we got done. End of story. Make sure it doesn't happen again. Then you've got a different reaction. And if they can come out of the game...
And Lee Desmond will know. If Lee Desmond is in the 93rd minute next week against Drogheda on the halfway line and there's a little nippy forward around him, he won't make the same mistake.
Yeah, completely. But you got to learn. You got to learn quick on the job, don't you?
Brilliant, yeah. No, I agree totally with that. So St. Pat's, yeah, I wouldn't lose hope yet. I know there's a 5-point gap. People are suggesting is the league over. I wouldn't lose hope yet in terms of St. Pat's still pushing them, and hopefully they do, because I think we need that for the league. The other big game, Stu, of the weekend was Friday night. Sligo Rovers away to Dundalk. Brilliant victory for them. Picked up a 1-0 win. That man, Jordan Gibson, probably been their best player this year. He scored 4 league goals now. Another cracker of a goal. And a really good performance, Joe. And a performance that, I'm going to get to the Dundalk stuff, but a performance that was probably one of the most comfortable Sligo Rovers have had all year, despite going down to 10 men. they weren't even pushed or weren't even kind of... you think a Dundalk team in Oriel Park that they'd be peppering the goal never came, never materialised. They were comfortable Sligo Rovers.
Yeah. Look, first of all, took the goal really well, didn't he, Gibson? You know, little bit fortuitous in the way he's turned. But, I mean, from that distance out, you think he's got a lot to do. But he's just so direct at the moment, and he's on the crest of the wave. And some of the goals he's been scoring have been outstanding. And you could see he just backed himself, didn't he? Just, you know, a couple of strides.
Oh, there was only one thing.
10-yard strides, bang. What was it, 35 yards? 35 yards.
And he caught it so well. I know the people were suggesting. Hell I looked, thought the keeper maybe, because Peter Cherry has got it. But
so what I would say, I wouldn't be more worried about that. What I'd be more worried about is the reaction of the defenders, the Dundalk players, which is, we spoke about this last week, and the dangers of not having a settled goalkeeper or a keeper that you've got full confidence in. It goes through the team, and you could see immediately it was a hell of a strike, you know, but because of the mistakes of last week, and because of the issues maybe with the other goalkeeper, maybe
it seeps through the team.
It's getting into the team now, and it's what happens is they start using it as an excuse. Oh, well, look, the goalkeeper's not up to it. That's the reason why we're struggling. And then you hear stories about other things going on outside of the game, and you think, not at it at all. No, not at it. This is a football club that's spending an awful lot of money. Oh. Those players are well paid. Looked after, and you'll know when you finish. It's only when you finish you realise what you have.
Looking at them Friday night, right, and I'm doing this job now. How long are we doing this? About 8 or 9 years, the punditry stuff, whatever, and we go to the games and do all that, and love it. And the Dundalk thing has kind of been the major part of that. Those few years, they were the major story that we've covered over the last 5-6 years, and they've been brilliant, and we've loved it. What I watched on Friday night was unrecognisable, Stu, from the teams over the years. I think it's done. I think it's absolutely done. All the trouble, all the mismanagement off the pitch. You look at the team, the heart and soul has gone out of the team that we all loved as a team. There's lads playing there now that just don't get it in terms of what it's all about, maybe, and the standards that have been set over a number of years up there. And I'm looking at it the other day, as I say, Sligo Rovers going there comfortable. How many points are they behind Shamrock Rovers? Are they 16? I think it's done. And I'm not just saying it's done to win the league. I think
project could be over.
Over.
Yeah. Everything is one big excuse now, Al. So when you think about it, the players are saying, the goalkeeper, you know, or we've no manager. The manager's, you know, the situation.
You know,
shambles.
The one thing
or one more, so kind of just, the owner's a headbanger. You know, he's wants us doing it. Everything's one big excuse. So what's happened now? They've all lost track of what it is they're supposed to be focusing on, and I go back to it, right? Stephen Kenny brought that club. He brought a team in, signed players in a 7-8 week period in the off season. Hungry.
Thing from Hungary.
Big players. No big names. Brought lads in from Bray. A couple of lads that were at Dundalk already. They were hungry. They were at the right age. They wanted to develop, and they wanted to fight for it, like, you know, exactly what you said. They're the total opposite.
It lacks direction, it lacks leadership, it lacks guidance. There's no accountability issue. So I'm looking at the players, as you says, and all the things you're pointing out there, and bang on. But they've no manager that they're accountable to. The manager is the man that's supposed to be, is the director of football at the moment, who's supposed to be up in the stand, and that's who the manager should be accountable, if that's the way the model are going. Then you have the director of football answer to the owners. So there's no direction. There's no one held accountable for anything. I'm looking at it there. And you know the one thing that struck me as well, which is, it's inexcusable really, Stu, in the sense that the one thing Dundalk always had over the years as well was how fit and strong they were compared to everybody else. Now, they're still a big physical, strong lads. They didn't look fit. The intensity of the match was like a training ground match. There was no intensity.
Yeah, and so you have to evolve as a team then as well. Like, you can't always depend on fitness, because other teams are going to catch up. It's as simple as that, and that's what's happened.
Sligo Rovers looked fitter and stronger than
them. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't going to take long for that to happen, you know. So they had to evolve. You can't always depend on that. So I think they, you know, Dundalk needed to kind of focus on signing better quality players, and that doesn't look to have been the case. Or it's the case that it's just there's too many new fresh faces coming in.
And that was another thing, Stu.
Confidence is at rock bottom.
The amount of players. There was more players in the stand than there was on the pitch.
But this is the model.
Players everywhere.
But see, this is the club is trying to the new owners are trying this let's call a spade a spade. They're trying to, you know, move players on. They're trying to almost like
a feeder club.
Like a feeder club, yeah. But they're doing it the wrong way, you know. I mean, the idea of a feeder club is that you get in a player to the benefit of your team, to win things. And then off that basis, they, you know, the value of that player will go up.
The team is winning as well.
And the team is winning and you'll move them on. It's not, you shouldn't be done on the basis of, you know, bring a player in, bring a couple of scouts here, have a look at him for a few weeks and see what you think of him and move
the
him
recruitment,
on.
The recruitment in the off-season was dreadful because I'm looking at them there. None of the players that they've brought in have improved the team. And you look at I'm looking at Sean Hoare at the moment with Shamrock Rovers, best centre-half in the league. Sean Gannon, I don't know how to let Sean Gannon go. I know he probably hasn't hit the heights, but he's doing fine with Shamrock Rovers. I'm looking at the lad Yurkovskis. Sean Gannon's a better player than him. I'm looking at Dave Massey at Drogheda playing left-sided centre-half or as a left full, and they played a young kid the other day. No disrespect to the young kid, but Dara Lee sitting on the bench. I'd have Massey there ahead of them all.
Yeah, but you could see the obviously the players had, you know, they saw this coming for a few years, maybe even a few years. But certainly when the opportunity came to move on, probably felt they'd no opportunity, they'd no real other option but to go, like, you know. And the problem, one of the big problems they have now at the moment is that obviously they are managerless, but they've got a period to kind of try and resurrect this or try and you know.
Because if that club wasn't to get into Europe,
wait till the fans come back, Alan.
Yeah,
well, there'll be murder.
There will be murder, yeah. They've lost the people as well up there already.
They have to get momentum back into their season before the fans come back into the club, because if that doesn't happen, it's over. It's definitely over.
They're playing Finn Harps away Friday night. I wouldn't be banking on them to go up there and get a result, even though Finn Harps have lost last week heavily. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, Stu. But I have to say, I wasn't one bit impressed with what I watched. Sligo Rovers, on the other hand, great win again. They've had a brilliant start, 19 points. And to be fair to them, Stu, they're keeping it going. They're at home next week against Waterford. Hopefully you'd like to keep a bit of momentum, win that as well. Because we do need Pats and Sligo Rovers to be pushing Shamrock Rovers. They're the only two now. Bohemians did get a good win, and we mentioned it last week that we felt they weren't too far away. Hopefully that kickstarts them now. But in terms of a title race, if there is going to be one, it's Pats and Sligo that we need to keep on winning.
That was my reaction. I mean, if Dundalk had won that game, you effectively had a two-horse race. You had Rovers and Pats going at it. But the fact that Sligo, to be fair to them, have overcome now a couple of results that haven't gone their way, and they've gotten themselves, as we say, back on the horse again. That's a hell of a result for them, and that'll give them a huge boost of confidence. But we definitely needed Sligo to kind of claw their way back into the title race, and they have now, because you need to. I mean, it's hugely important, and it'll make it more difficult for Shamrock Rovers as well. When you've got competitiveness in, you know, Pats, you've got Sligo,
Finn Harps, need to be challenged as well, don't they, Shamrock Rovers?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course they do. Mm. I mean, they're not going to improve unless they, you know, it's a walk in the park for them. You know, when you think back to this month. Was it a couple of years ago when Rovers got off to a wonderful start? Absolutely flying at the start of the season. I think it was 2-3 seasons ago. Hit May.
Blew up.
Just absolutely blew up. Just, I think it was a mentality thing with them. Now, it's not going to happen to them now. But, you know, they're the things that you have to, that you learn from, like, you know.
Another one, Stu. Now, this one, I wanted to talk to you about this because this doesn't sit right with me in terms of what the young lads were asked to do. I don't know the full ins and outs in terms of there was statements released and the COVID thing. So obviously Waterford felt as though they couldn't field the team because there was a case. And the players then, I saw Brian Murphy had a statement down, the players, through guidance, government guidance and the FAI and whatever, told that they couldn't play because there were close contacts. Now, the thing I would say about that is, we were in Derry 2 weeks ago, and Drogheda travelled up on two different buses, right? Drogheda did. We were in the hotel beforehand, and the Drogheda team were in the hotel as well, having something to eat. I was chatting to a member of their staff, and the players were all spaced out, socially distanced. They were telling me the protocols that they're going through in terms of how the players are travelling with the two separate buses. They're training. I met Gary Deegan out in the foyer, and he was sitting with two other lads, and I spoke to him in the foyer, and I was having a chat with Gary, and he was explaining to me that he has to stay with these two other lads because this is our carpool and we have to stay in our little bubble, and he wasn't mixing with any other players. And I thought to myself, this is absolutely brilliant. Fair play to Drogheda, the levels that they're going to in terms of to not be breaking any of the rules, to stick to the COVID guidelines, to keep everyone. Even their member of staff told me, Chris Lyons is their centre forward. I thought this was brilliant. Chris Lyons is their centre forward, and Dinny Corcoran has obviously been signed. Dinny's probably back up at the moment. They don't let Dinny Corcoran sit next to Chris Lyons, because if Chris Lyons went down with COVID and Dinny Corcoran was a close contact, the two of them are gone. So they've no backup centre forward. I thought the level of detail and the thinking behind what they're doing here, I thought was brilliant.
I presume all the clubs are doing this.
But listen, the first thing that I thought looking at the Waterford thing is, how can the whole lot of them be considered close contacts? If they were doing it right in their own little separate bubbles.
Well, obviously they weren't.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Now I'm speculating here, but that's the first thing came to my mind. I am defending them in the sense that I don't think it was right that they had to play the under-19s, especially lads who haven't played in 6 months. I don't think that was fair. The rule is in place. There was a precedent set, obviously, with the Cabinteely-Galway thing. I think they're still disputing that, even though Cabinteely are appealing the decision and they got a walk over Galway. So maybe that was the case in this regard, that Waterford felt that it would be the same. They'd lose the 3 points, so they play the young lads. But the credibility of league playing young fellas who haven't played in 6 months, they're losing 7-0, getting annihilated and getting hammered. For Drogheda, it's great because they picked up a handy 3 points. But it just doesn't sit right with me, the whole thing, Stu.
No, I completely agree. I mean, it's in terms of the COVID cases, we've really done our stuff. Like, I've been really very impressed with the level of due diligence that the club have had. Like, we haven't had a COVID case in how long? I mean, you know,
that was the first one,
and it shouldn't happen either. I mean, top professionals, like, you know, and people need to realise as well that you know, there's protocols put in place. You're a professional footballer, so you know, following rules like this shouldn't be an issue for you. But I don't, as of yet, know the ins and outs of this. But it certainly comes across as the fact that were they able to actually ascertain who was a close contact? Maybe they didn't. You know, if you can't turn around and say, well, hang on, he's a close contact to 1, 2, 3, 4 players, you know, take them out of the game.
But that's my point. If you're doing
obviously
it,
that wasn't the case, they couldn't do it.
Well, this is what we're speculating. It mustn't have been, because, as I say, the draw, the lengths and the levels they were going to, I saw it with my own two eyes, and they spoke to me, and they were staying in their little threes and fours in their bubbles. So, for example, Gary Deegan was in that little three or four. If he got struck down, you'd straight away know those lads that travel in the car with me, that's my bubble, they're close contacts. But for the Waterford one, the question I would ask about, and as I say, I'm defending them in one sense in the fact that they had to play the under-19s, which I don't think is right. But I do have to ask the question, how can the whole squad be wiped out?
Because obviously you're not doing your stuff. It's as simple as that. They've obviously no record of it. They weren't following those protocols. I don't know. Is it the management team? Did they come in and didn't really give two flying, you know, shites about this?
Or was that going on before the management team left? Because Kevin Sheedy and Mike Newell obviously left the week before, and there was stuff going on there in terms of, was it being run properly? We don't know. I don't know. Too many questions for me around that I'm not... And I don't agree with Drogheda going down playing in under-19s and beating them 7-0. Because that 3 points will prove so crucial at the end of the season, Stu, if Drogheda stay up by a point or two. And they've done nothing wrong. It's nothing against Drogheda. I'm just saying, those 7 goals, what if it comes down to goal difference, who gets relegated, and it was Drogheda and Longford?
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, so absolutely.
It's not right.
No, it's not right. It's like I say, it's the integrity of the game here. Like, you know, and you just feel that I suppose to defend it, maybe even the FAI on this one, like, you know, the protocols have been put in place,
and
everyone else seems to be following them.
Yeah, yeah.
So why aren't Waterford? Simple as that.
Anyway, yeah. So that's how I feel about that. Come the weekend now Sligo Rovers are playing Waterford. I don't mind if they bring an under-19s down to Sligo at the weekend. No, I'm only messing. But it could kick in. That's the point, Stu. If it's going off what we know with COVID and all, is it 10 days of close contact, 14 days? So it could run into this weekend as well. I don't know the situation, if they're free to play this weekend or what's the story. I think there was an interview with Mike Gagan, who's looking after the team at the moment, and he suggested it might run into the weekend. But again, even though they're my team, Sligo Rovers, if they pick up an easy 3 points the weekend, I don't think that's right.
No,
compared to all the other teams.
You don't want to see that either. No, it just undermines everything. And especially at a time when we're coming out of this nonsense, you know, you just feel that this should be second nature to close by now. Mm. I mean, you know.
And to be fair, it is to the majority, Stu.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know why this situation has occurred in Waterford. The whole place, I get the impression, you're talking about Dundalk, it's in rag order. It's not been run properly at all. It hasn't been run properly since it's been taken over. I mean, and it's just that's reflected in the club. It's as simple as that.
Okay, so that's the Premier Division stuff, Stu. Big games the weekend again. Finn Harps, Dundalk, Drogheda, Pats, Sligo Rovers, Waterford, Longford at home to Bohemian, Shamrock Rovers at home to Derry City. Derry City picked up a 1-1 draw with Longford at the weekend, Manly getting the equaliser. But the other games, I say, Bowes winning 4-0. We felt that was coming. I hope it kickstarts Bohemians because we mentioned it last week. I felt as though they're playing some really good stuff, and I do hope it kicks them on and starts moving them up the table and getting back to the standards that they set over the last couple of years. In the first division, Stu, Cork City 5, Wexford 0. Cork City actually got a victory. UCD 3, Treaty 2. Andy Myler doing really good with UCD as well. Fair play to him. Shelburne 1, Athlone 0. Galway 1, Bray Wanderers 2. Galway struggling and they're full time as well, which I don't think that's good enough in that division. Cabin Teely 1, Cove Ramblers 0. In the Women's National League, Cork City 1, Wexford 3, Pemount 6, Athlone 0, DLR Waves 1, Bohemians 0, Treaty 0, Shelburne 5. We started the show, Stu, talking about our... He's our favourite player, isn't he? He's my favourite player. Is he your favourite player?
Ah, he is, yeah. How can you not be...
He's mine, I love him. I first came across him. I came up playing for Belvedere. Did I tell you this story? So... when I was 15, before I went to England, they suggested I come up and play in the DDSL before, if I'm staying here for the year before I go to England, stay and play at the highest level that you can play it here. So Vincent Butler was the manager of the Irish team at the time under 15, and he was heavily involved with Belvedere. So we mentioned it to Vincent. He says, yeah, absolutely, come up and play with us at Belvedere. We'd love to have you. So I thought, great. Now, we used to travel up every Sunday, myself and my dad. And first Sunday we came up anyway, so a couple of the managers, Matt Halpin, Jerry Smullen, welcomed us in. Alan, you're very welcome. This is the group of lads. And we had a really good team. I only knew one or two of them that maybe have been involved in the Irish setup, but I didn't know the rest of them. So we're out warming up, and them days a warm up under 15 was you're just kicking a ball up and down the pitch to each other, whatever, right?
You should still have that, yeah.
So there was this little fella caught me eye. Now, when I say little fella, Stu, I mean he was that size, right? Yeah. So I'm looking anyway, minding my own business. I'm only new in the place, didn't know anyone, keep my head down. But I'm kind of looking over saying, what's going on with this little young fella? You know, because he's out in the middle of us kicking the ball. So I says, he must be the manager's son. There's no way. Because 15-year-olds then was big lads. Like, so I'm looking at it saying, nah, he can't be playing. So that was grand anyway. So we ran over to 10 to 11. The manager calls in, right? And he starts handing out the jersey. So number one, number two, number three. So I think it got to me number eight or whatever. So number 11 was left, come to number 11. So the little fella's in the group, right? Gets the jersey, throws it to him, right? Throws it to the little fella. I looked over, I says, he can't be playing. He will get murdered here, right? So that was grand. They all put on the jerseys. The jersey was down around his knees, yeah. Right? So I ran over to my dad. I took off. I had like a warm-up top. Ran over, threw the top to my dad. And he says to me, is the little fella playing? I says, well, they're after giving him a jersey. He must be. So I was like, I know. Look at the size of him, right? So we went out on the pitch, right, Stu? I'm not joking. Took the ball, kicked off. Goes out to the left wing to this little fella. Well, he was putting it through their legs, over their head, around them, right? He was unbelievable. Yeah. And I came off the pitch afterwards. He blew me away. I came off the pitch and we both sat into the car. We're finished up and got back into the car. And my dad looked at me and I looked at him and we just said, the little fella. And that was the start of it then. And yeah. We played then with the Irish teams. Could never work out. Well, I could work out, but never ever got picked. Like you mentioned, the fact he had to do it the hard way, and it was always due to the fact, oh, he's too small, he's too small. Never got picked for the Irish teams. Started to get picked then when he started playing with Shells. He played a lot with the 21s, and as you say, the rest is history. But what a player!
Well, he funnily enough, he was my first sending off. Playing against Shells, yeah.
You nailed
in Talca Park. I said, I'm not fucking having this fella anymore. I said, I'm just not having
it. I was straight red,
yeah. He went past me and I just kicked him up in the air and I said, I'm gone. But I just can't, I can't put up with him.
And was he running amok in the
he
match?
He was running amok, he was. And none of our lads had put anything on him. So I said, I'm having the laugh of this fella. End of story. I lost the plot. I went home that night in the heights of it, I was fuming, like, you know, in the heights of it. And
wouldn't be like you.
Neil sat me down and says, I'm pregnant. And sure, I started roaring, crying.
Surely you didn't. Surely after that you should have named the child Wezzo.
It was the best night of my life. So thanks, Wes. Wow. But do you know what? I think he learned this from a very young age, right? The whole thing about him being too small and not getting picked, and he should have been gone. Even after we played Deportivo and Lansdowne, he should have been gone. Should have been, you know, it should have been someone forking out a couple of million on him.
If he was Spanish, Wesolino, Julinho, he would have been gone.
Like, completely. But he never, his head never dropped.
No.
Can you imagine the amount of times people must have been going to him, sure, yeah. You know, how is he not getting away? Why aren't you going? Like, he must have been numb in the face listening to people. Like, you know, and I think that's probably to this day why he just doesn't talk to do interviews. He's probably sick of people telling him how great he was and brilliant he was. You imagine it must get very difficult for him. His head never dropped. Ever dropped. I've never seen him lose, get frustrated, lose his temper.
I've never seen him angry.
Get upset over something. He's such a wonderful nature. And I think he learned that from when he was younger to deal with disappointment. It's just to nutmeg you.
And just loves the game so much. Like, he'd be caught.
Yeah, I mean.
There'd be fellas around him and he'd be still and he'd be looking at, why didn't you give it to me? And I'm like, well, there was five of them around you that time. Like, but still, give it to me.
Yeah, he's special. He's so special. And I know where you're going with this because he had such an impact on me when I started writing music again 4 or 5 years ago. I couldn't get him out of my head. I just couldn't get him out of my head. And it wasn't just the football thing. It was his attitude.
The resilience he's built up over the years.
Nothing was handed to this kid in the play. Nothing. I can guarantee you that. Like, you know, he had to fight and scrap for everything he got in his life. And I think he's an inspiration, not just to me or to you or to the Irish people, but to the community around him from where he's from in the city. They think he's God. We all think he's God, like, you know, and he deserves every credit that he gets. And to me, and I hope to everybody else, he's a superstar.
Brilliant, Stu. Great words. And because of that and the love that we have for him, Stewie has released a lot of music. Check it out. Brilliant music as well. But he has written a song to do with Wes Oates called Superstar. And as a one-off, because he got promoted with Cambridge and he's finished up playing now and the brilliant career that he's had, we're going to finish out the show this week. Before we do that, I just want to say thanks to Benetti Menswear, as always, looking after us. Thanks to you for listening and sharing and messages and all the usual with us. You're very, very good. Paul Morris as well, brilliant job every week. And we're going to finish off the show with Superstar by Stewie Byrne.